clothes. A flash of lightning from outside illuminates the attic space. Mallory closes her eyes. In her darkness, she sees a frozen image of the attic's walls. The window. The boxes. And a man, standing where Dawn was standing when she came up here. It's not possible, she thinks. But it is. And before her eyes are fully open, she understands who is standing there. Who is in the attic with her? Gary, Mallory says, a thousand thoughts accosting her. You've been hiding in the cellar. She thinks of Victor growling at the cellar door. She thinks of Dawn sleeping down there. As Mallory looks Gary in the eye, the argument downstairs escalates. Jules is hoarse. Dawn is livid. It sounds like they are exchanging blows. Gary emerges from the shadows. He is approaching her. When we closed our eyes and Tom opened the front door, she thinks, knowing it is true, Dawn snuck him farther into the house. What are you doing here? Olympia suddenly yells. Gary does not look at her. He only comes to Mallory. Stay away from me! Mallory screams. He kneels beside her. You, he says, so vulnerable in your present state. I'd have thought you would have had more sympathy than to send someone out into a world like this one. Lightning flashes again. Tom! Jules! Her baby is not out yet, but he must be close. Don't yell, Gary says. I'm not angry.
Please leave me alone. Please leave us.
Gary laughs. You keep saying that. You keep wanting me to leave. Thunder rolls outside. The housemates are getting louder.
You never left, Mallory says, each word like removing a small rock from her chest.
That's right. I never did.
Tears pool in Mallory's eyes.
Dawn had the heart to lend me a hand, and the foresight to predict I might be voted out.
Dawn, she thinks, what have you done?
Gary leans closer. Do you mind if I tell you a story while you do this?
What?
A story. Something to keep your mind off the pain. And let me tell you that you're doing a wonderful job. Better than my wife did.
Olympia's breathing sounds bad. Too labored. Like she couldn't possibly survive this.
One of two things is happening here, Gary says. Either...
Please, Mallory cries. Please leave me alone.
Either my philosophies are right or... And I hate to use this word, or I'm immune.
It feels like the baby is at the edge of her body, yet it feels too big to escape. Mallory gasps and closes her eyes, but the pain is everywhere, even in her darkness. They don't know he's up here. Oh my God, they don't know he's here.
I've watched this street for a long time, Gary says. I watched as Tom and Jules stumbled their way around the block. I was mere inches from Tom as he studied the very tent that sheltered me.
Stop it! Stop it!
But yelling only makes the pain worse. Mallory focuses. She pushes. She breathes. But she can't help but hear. I found it fascinating, the lengths the man would go to, while I watched. Unharmed, as the creatures passed daily, nightly, sometimes a dozen at once. It's the reason I settled on this street, Mallory. You have no idea how busy it can be out there.
Please, 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 please.
From the floor below, she hears Tom's voice. Jules, I need you. Then a thundering of footsteps leading back down.
Tom! Help us!
Gary is up here! Tom!
He's preoccupied, Gary says. There's a real situation going on down there.
Gary rises. He steps to the attic door and quietly closes it. Then he locks it.
Is that any better? He asks.
What have you done?
Mallory hisses. More shouting from below now. It sounds like everybody is moving at once. For an instant, she believes she has gone mad. No matter how safe she's been, it feels like there is no hiding from the insanity of the new world. Someone screams in the hall below the locked attic door. Mallory thinks it's Felix.
My wife wasn't prepared,
Gary says, suddenly beside her.
I watched her as she saw one. I didn't warn her it was coming.
Why didn't you tell us?
Mallory asks, crying, pushing.
Because, Gary says, just like the others, none of you would have believed me. Except Dawn.
You're mad!
Gary laughs, grinning.
What is happening downstairs? Olympia yells. Mallory, what is happening downstairs? I don't know.
It's Dawn, Gary says. He's trying to convince the others what I've taught him. It's Dawn!
The voice from below is as clear as if it were spoken in the attic.
Dawn pulled them down. Dawn pulled the blankets down.
They won't hurt us,
Gary whispers. The whiskers of his moist beard touch Mallory's ear. But she is no longer listening to him.
Mallory?
Olympia whispers.
Dawn pulled the blankets down and opened the door. They're in the house. Do you hear me? They're in the house.
The baby is coming. The baby is coming. The baby is coming. Mallory?
Olympia, she says, defeated, void of hope. Is it true? Is her own voice saying as much?
Yes. They're in the house now.
The storm outside whips against the walls. The chaos below sounds impossible.
They sound like wolves,
Olympia cries.
They sound like wolves! Dawn, 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 dawn.
Tore the blankets down. Let them in. Someone saw them. Let them in. Someone went mad. Who was it? Dawn let them in. Dawn tore down the blankets. Dawn doesn't believe they can hurt us. Dawn thinks it's only in our mind. Gary knelt by him in the chair in the dining room. Gary spoke to him from behind the tapestry in the cellar. Dawn pulled the blankets down. Gary told him they were fake. Gary told him they were harmless.
May have gone mad. Who is it? Who has?
Push, Mallory. Push. You have a baby to worry about. Close your eyes if you have to, but push. Push.
They're in the house now, and everyone in it sounds like wolves.
The birds, Mallory thinks, hysterical, were a good idea, Tom. A great one.
Olympia is frantically asking her questions, but Mallory can't answer. Her mind is full.
Is it true? Is there really one in the house? That can't be true. We'd never allow it. Is there really one in the house? Right now?
Something slams against a wall downstairs. A body, maybe. The dogs are barking.
Someone threw a dog against the wall.
Dawn tore the blankets down!
Who has their eyes closed down there? Who has the presence of mind? Would Mallory? Would Mallory have been able to close her eyes as her housemates went mad?
Oh my God, Mallory thinks. They're going to die down there.
The baby is killing her. Gary is still whispering in her ear.
What you hear down there? That's what I mean, Mallory. They think they're supposed to go mad. But they don't have to.
I spent seasons out there. I watched them for weeks at a time.
Impossible, Mallory says.
She doesn't know if this word is directed at Gary, the noise below, or the pain she believes will never pass.
The first time I saw one, I thought I'd gone mad, Gary nervously laughs. But I didn't. And when I slowly realized I was still of sound mind, I began to understand what was happening to my friends, my family, to everybody.
I don't want to hear any more,
Mallory screams. She feels like she may split down the center. There has been a mistake, she thinks. The baby that tries to escape her is too big and it will split her.
It's a boy, she believes.
You know what?
Stop!
You know what?
No, no, no!
Olympia howls. The sky howls. The dogs howl downstairs. Mallory believes she hears Jules specifically. She hears him racing a floor below. She hears him trying to tear something apart in the bathroom down there.
Maybe I am immune, Mallory. Or maybe I'm simply aware.
She wants to say, "Do you know how much you could have done for us? Do you understand how much safer you could have made us?" But Gary is mad. And he probably always has been.
Don pulled the blankets down.
Gary knelt by him in the dining room. Gary spoke to him from behind a tapestry in the cellar. Gary, the demon on Don's soft shoulder. There is a thunderous knocking at the attic's floor door.
Let me in!
Someone screams.
It's Felix, Mallory thinks. Or Don.
Jesus Christ, let me in!
But it's neither. It's Tom. Open the door for him!
Mallory screams at Gary.
Are you sure you want me to do that? It doesn't sound to me like a safe idea.
Please, 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 let him in. It's Tom. Oh my God, it's Tom. It's Tom. Oh, my God, it's Tom.
She pushes hard. Oh, God, she pushes hard.
Breathe, Gary tells her. Breathe. You're almost there now.
Please, Mallory cries. Please.
Let me in. Let me up there.
Olympia is screaming now, too.
Open the door for him. It's Tom.
The insanity from below is knocking on the door.
Tom.
Tom is insane. Tom saw one of the creatures. Tom is insane.
Did you hear him? Did you hear his voice? That was the sound he makes. That was how he sounds without his mind. Without his beautiful mind.
Gary rises and crosses the attic. The rain pounds on the roof. The knocking on the attic floor door stops.
Mallory looks across the attic to Olympia.
Olympia's black hair mingles with the shadows. Her eyes blaze from within.
We're almost there, she says.
Olympia's child is coming out. In the candlelight, Mallory can see it is halfway there. Instinctively, she reaches for it, though it is an attic floor away.
Olympia, don't forget to cover your child's eyes. Don't forget to—
The attic floor's door crashes open hard. The lock has been broken. Mallory screams, but all she hears is her own heartbeat, louder than all of the new world.
Then she is silent.
Gary rises and steps back toward the window.
There are heavy footsteps behind her.
Mallory's baby is emerging. The stairs groan.
Who is it?
She screams.
Who is it? Is everyone okay? Is it Tom? Who is it?
Someone she cannot see has climbed the stairs and is in the attic with them. Mallory,
her back to the stairs, watches as Olympia's expression changes from pain to awe.
Olympia, she thinks, don't look. We've been so good, so brave. Don't look. Reach for your child instead. Hide its eyes when it comes out completely. Hide its eyes and hide your own. Don't look. Olympia, don't look.
But she understands it's too late for her friend. Olympia leans forward. Her eyes grow huge. Her mouth opens. Her face becomes three perfect circles. For a moment, Mallory sees her features contort, then shine instead.
You're beautiful,
Olympia says, smiling. It's a broken, twitching smile.
You're not bad at all. You want to see my baby? Do you want to see my baby?
The child, Mallory thinks. The child is in her and she has gone mad.
Oh my God.
Olympia has gone mad. Oh my God. The thing is behind me and the thing is behind my child. Mallory closes her eyes. As she does, the image of Gary remains, still standing at the edge of the candlelight's reach. He does not look as confident as he professed that he should. He looks like a scared child. Olympia, Mallory says, you've got to cover the baby's eyes. You've got to reach down for your baby. Mallory can't see her friend's expression, but her voice reveals the change within her.
What?
You're going to tell me how to raise my child? What kind of a bitch are you? What kind of a... Olympia's words morph into a guttural growl. Insanity fuss. Gary's diseased, dangerous words. Olympia is baying. Mallory's baby is crowning. She pushes. With a strength she didn't know she possessed, Mallory inches forward on the towel. She wants Olympia's child. She will protect it. Then, amid all this pain and madness, Mallory hears Olympia's baby's very first cry. Close its eyes! But at last, Mallory's child comes through, and her hand is there to cup its eyes. Its head is so soft, and she believes she's gotten to him in time. Come here, she says, bringing the baby to her chest. Come here and close your eyes. Gary laughs anxiously from across the room. Incredible, he says. Mallory feels for the steak knife. She finds it and cuts her own cord. Then she cuts two strips from the bloody towel beneath her. She feels his sex and knows it's a boy and has no one to tell this to. No sister, no mother, no father, no nurse, no Tom. She holds him tight to her chest. Slowly she ties a piece of the towel around his eyes. How important is it that he sees his mother's face when he enters the world? She hears the creature shift behind her.
Baby, Olympia says, but her voice is cracked.
She sounds like she's using the voice of an older woman.
My baby, she crows.
Mallory slides forward. The muscles in her body resist. She reaches for Olympia's child.
Here, she says blindly. Here, Olympia, let me have it. Let me see it.
Olympia grunts. Why should I let you? What do you want my child for? Are you mad?
No, I just want to see it.
Mallory's eyes are still closed. The attic is quiet. The rain lands softly on the roof. Mallory slides forward, still on the blood beneath her body.
Can I? Can I just see her? It is a girl, right? Weren't you right about that?
Mallory hears something so astonishing that she is halted midway across the floor. Olympia is gnawing at something. She knows it's the child's cord. Her stomach turns.
She keeps her eyes closed tight. She's going to throw up. Can I see her? Mallory manages to ask.
Here. Here, Olympia says. Look at her. Look at her.
At last, Mallory's hands are on Olympia's baby. It's a girl.
Olympia stands up. It sounds like she steps in a rain puddle. It's blood, Mallory knows. Afterbirth, sweat and blood.
Thank you, Mallory whispers. Thank you, Olympia. This action, this handing off of her child, will always shine to Mallory. The moment Olympia did right by her child despite having lost her mind. Mallory ties the second piece of towel around the baby's eyes.
Olympia shuffles toward the draped window, to where Gary stands. The thing waits behind Mallory and is still.
Mallory grips both babies, shielding their eyes even more with her bloody wet fingers. Both babies cry. And suddenly Olympia is struggling with something, sliding something, like she's climbing now. Olympia?
It sounds like Olympia is setting something up.
Olympia? What are you doing, Olympia? Gary, stop her. Please, Gary.
Her words are useless. Gary is the maddest of all.
I'm going outside, sir,
Olympia says to Gary, who must be near.
I've been inside a long time.
Olympia, stop!
I'm going to step outside, she says, her voice at once like a child and a centenarian on her deathbed.
Olympia!
It's too late. Mallory hears the glass of the attic window shatter. Something bangs outside the house.
Silence.
From downstairs, from the attic. Then Gary speaks.
She hangs. She hangs by her cord.
Don't. Please, God, don't let this man describe it to me.
She hangs by her cord. The most incredible thing I've ever seen. She hangs by her cord.
There is laughter, joy in his voice. The thing moves behind her. Mallory is at the epicenter of all this madness. Old madness, the kind people used to get from war, divorce, poverty, and things like knowing that your friend is
hanging by her cord. By her cord!
Shut up!
Mallory screams blindly.
Shut up!
But her words are choked, as she feels the thing behind her is leaning in.
A part of it, its face, moves near her lips.
Mallory only breathes. She does not move. The attic is silent. She can feel the warmth, the heat of the thing beside her.
Shannon, she thinks. Look at the clouds. They look like us. You and I.
She tightens her grip over the baby's eyes. She hears the thing behind her retract. It sounds as if it's moving away from her, farther. It pauses, stops. When she hears the wooden stairs creaking, and when she's sure it is the sound of someone descending, she releases a sob deeper than any she's ever known.
The steps grow quiet, quieter.
Then they are gone.
It's left us,
she tells the babies.
Now she hears Gary move.
Don't come near us,
she screams with her eyes closed.
Don't you touch us!
He doesn't touch her. He passes by, and the stairs creak again.
He's gone downstairs. He's going to see who made it, who didn't.
She heaves, aches from exhaustion, from blood loss.
Her body tells her to sleep.
sleep. They are alone in the attic, Mallory and the babies. She begins to lie back. She needs to. Instead, she waits. She listens. She rests. How much time is passing? How long have I held these babies? But a new sound fractures her reprieve. It's coming from downstairs. It's a noise that was made often in the old world. Olympia hangs, so he said, from the attic window. Her body thumps against the house in the wind. And now something rings from below. It's the telephone. The telephone is ringing. Mallory is almost mesmerized by the sound. How long has it been since she's heard something like it? Someone is calling them. Someone is calling back. Mallory turns herself, sliding in the afterbirth. She places the girl in her lap, then gently covers her with her shirt. Using her empty hand, she feels for the head of the ladder stairs. They are steep. They are old. No woman who just gave birth should have to negotiate them at all. But the phone is ringing. Someone is calling back, and Mallory is going to answer it. Ring! Despite their towel blindfolds, she tells the babies to keep their eyes closed. This command will be the most common thing she says to them over the next 4 years, and nothing will stop her from saying it, whether or not they're too young to understand her. Ring! She slides her ass to the edge of the floor and swings her legs over to rest her feet on the first step. Her body screams at her to stop, but she continues down. Down the stairs now. She cradles the boy in her right arm, her palm wrapped around his face. The girl is up inside her shirt. Mallory's eyes are closed, and the world is black, and she needs sleep so bad she might as well fall from the stairs and into it. Only she walks, she steps, and she uses the phone as her guide. Ring! Her feet touch the light blue carpeting of the second floor's white hall. Eyes closed, she does not see these colors, just like she does not see Jules lying face down along the right wall. 5 bloody streaks trailing from the height of her head to where his hand lies pressed against the floor. At the top of the stairs, she pauses. She breathes deep. She believes she can do it. Then she continues. She passes Cheryl, but does not know it. Not yet. Cheryl's head faces the first floor, her feet the second. Her body is horribly, unnaturally contorted. Without knowing it, Mallory steps inches from her. She almost touches Felix at the foot of the stairs, but she doesn't. Later, she will gasp when she feels the holes in his face. Ring! She has no idea she passes one of the huskies. It is slumped against the wall. The wall is stained dark purple. She wants to say, "Is anyone still here?" She wants to scream it. But the phone rings, and she does not believe it will stop until she answers it. She follows the sound, leaning against the wall. Rain and wind come in through broken windows. I must answer the phone. If her eyes were to open, she would not be able to process the amount of blood marking the house. Ring! She will see all of that later. But right now the phone is so loud, so close. Mallory turns, puts her back against the wall, then slides excruciatingly to the carpet. The phone is on the small end table. Her body aches and burns every part of it. Placing the boy beside the girl in her lap, she reaches out with her hand and fumbles for the phone that has been ringing without rest.
Hello?
Hello? It's a man. His voice sounds so calm, so horribly out of place.
Who is this?
Mallory asks. She can hardly understand that she is using a telephone. My name is Rick. We got your message a few days ago. I guess you could say we've been busy. What's your name?
Who is this?
Again, my name is Rick. A man named Tom left a message with us.
Tom?
Yes. He does live there, right?
My name is Mallory.
Are you okay, Mallory? You sound broken up.
Mallory breathes deep. She doesn't think she will ever be okay again.
Yes,
she answers.
I'm okay.
We haven't got much time right now. Are you interested in getting out from where you are? Somewhere safer? I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Yes, Mallory says.
Here's what you do then. Write this down if you can. Do you have a pen?
Mallory says yes and reaches for the pen kept by Tom's phone book. The babies cry.
It sounds like you have a baby with you?
I do.
I imagine that's your reason for wanting to find a better place. Here's the information, Mallory. Take the river.
What?
Take the river. Do you know where it is?
Yes, I do know where it is. It's right behind the house. 80 yards from the well, I'm told.
Good. Take the river. It's about as dangerous a thing as you can do, but I imagine if you and Tom have made it this long, you can do it. I found you guys on the map, and it looks like you'll have to travel at least 20 miles. Now, the river is going to split.
It's going to what?
I'm sorry, I'm probably moving too fast, but where I'm directing you is a better place.
How is that?
Well, we don't have windows, for one. We have running water, and we grow our own food. It's as self-contained as you can find nowadays. There are plenty of bedrooms. Nice ones. Most of us think we've got it better now than we did before.
How many of you are there?
108.
The number could be any for Mallory. Or it could be infinity.
But let me tell you how to get here first. It would be a tragedy if the phone line went out before you knew where to go.
All right.
The river is going to split into 4 channels. The one you want is the second one from the right, so you can't hug the right bank and expect to make it. It's tricky, and you're going to have to open your eyes.
Mallory slowly shakes her head. No.
Rick continues. And this is how you'll know when that time comes,
the man tells her.
You'll hear a recording, a voice. We can't sit by the river all day, every day. It's just too dangerous. Instead, we've got a speaker down there. It's motion activated. We have a very clear understanding of the woods and water beyond our facility because of devices like it. Once the speaker is activated, the recording plays for 30 minutes on a loop. You'll hear it. The same 40-second sound bite repeated. It's loud, clear. And when you do, that's when you'll have to open your eyes.
Thank you, Rick, but I just can't do that.
Her voice is listless, destroyed.
I understand it's terrifying. Of course it is. But that's the catch, I suppose. There's no other way.
Mallory thinks of hanging up, but Rick continues.
We've got so many good things happening here. We make progress every day. Of course, we're nowhere near where we'd like to be, but we're trying.
Mallory starts to cry. The words, what this man is telling her. Is it hope he gives her? Or is it some deeper variation of the incredible hopelessness she already feels?
If I do what you're telling me to do, Mallory says, how will I find you from there?
From the split?
Yes.
We have an alarm system. It's the same technology used for triggering the recording you'll hear. Once you take the correct channel, you'll go another 100 yards. Then you'll trigger our notification alarm. A fence will be lowered. You'll be stuck. And we'll come looking for what got stuck in our fence.
Mallory shivers. Oh, yeah?
She asks. Yes? You sound skeptical.
Visions of the old world rush through her mind. But with each memory comes a leash, a chain, and an instinctive feeling that tells her this man and this place might be good, might be bad, might be better than where she is now, might be worse. But she will never be free again.
How many of you are there?
Rick asks. Mallory listens to the silence of the house. The windows are broken. The door is probably open. She must stand up, close the door, cover the windows. But it all feels like it's happening to someone else. 3, she says, lifeless. If the number changes...
Don't worry about it, Mallory. Any number you come with is fine. We have space enough for a few hundred, and we're working on more. Just come as soon as you can.
Rick, can you come help me now?
She hears Rick take a deep breath.
I'm sorry, Mallory. It's too much of a risk. I'm needed here. I realize that sounds selfish, but I'm afraid you'll have to get to us.
Mallory nods silently. Amid the gore, the loss, the pain, she respects that this man must stay safe. Only I can't open my eyes right now, and I have 2 newborns in my lap who have yet to see the world, and the room smells of piss, blood, and death. Air comes in fast from outside. It's cold, and I know that means the window is broken or the front door is open. So dangerously open. So all this sounds good, Rick. It truly does. But I'm not sure how I'm going to get to the bathroom yet, let alone onto a river for 40 miles or whatever it was you said.
Mallory, I'll check in on you. I'll call again. Or do you think you'll be coming right away?
I don't know. I don't know when I'll be able to come.
Okay.
But thank you.
It feels like the most sincere thank you Mallory has ever spoken in her life.
I'll call you in a week, Mallory.
Okay.
Mallory?
Yes?
If I don't call, it could mean the lines have finally died on our end, or it could mean the lines at your place are out too. Just trust me when I tell you we will be here. You come any time. We will be here.
Okay, Mallory says.
Rick gives her his phone number. Mallory, using the pen, blindly scribbles the numbers on a page in the open phone book.
Goodbye, Mallory.
Goodbye.
Just a simple, everyday talk on the phone. Mallory hangs up. Then she hangs her head and cries. The babies shift in her lap. She cries for another 20 minutes, unbroken, until she screams when she hears something scratching at the cellar door. It is Victor. He is barking to be let out. Somehow, he was blessedly locked in the cellar. Maybe Jules, knowing what was coming, did it. After rearranging the blankets and closing the doors, she will use a broomstick to search every inch of the home for creatures. It will be 6 hours before she feels safe enough to open her eyes, at which point she will see what went on in the house while she was delivering her baby. But before then, with her eyes closed tightly, Mallory will stand up and step back through the living room until she reaches the top of the cellar stairs. And there she will step by Tom's body. She will not know it is him, believing it to be a bag of sugar that her foot nudges, as she kneels before the bucket of well water and begins the laborious job of cleaning the children and herself. She will speak with Rick a number of times in the coming months, but soon the lines reaching the house will die. It will take her 6 months to wash the house of the bodies and blood. She will find Don on the kitchen floor, reaching for the cellar. As if he raced there, mad, to ask Gary for his mind back. She will check for Gary. Everywhere. But she will never find a sign of him. She will always be aware of him. The possibility of him. Out there. In the world. Most of the housemates will be buried in a semicircle around the well out back. She will forever feel the uneven lumps, the graves she dug and filled while blindfolded, whenever she gets water for herself or the children. Tom will be buried closest to the house. The patch of grass to which she takes the children, blindfolded, as a means of getting them fresh air. A place where, she hopes, their spirits run freest. It will be 4 years before she answers yes to whether or not she is coming soon to the place Rick described on the phone. But now, she just washes. Now she just cleans the babies. And the babies cry. 43. Tom's recorded voice plays over again. He is leaving a message.
273 Shillingham. My name is Tom. I'm sure you understand the relief I feel at getting your answering machine.
The blindfold is still held an inch from her closed eyes. She raises a hand and brings her fingers to the black cloth. For a moment, both she and the creature hold the same blindfold. This creature, or ones like it, stole Shannon, her mother, her father, and Tom. This thing and the things like it have stolen childhood from the children. In a way, Mallory is not afraid. They have done everything to her already. No, she says, tugging on the cloth. This is mine. For a moment, nothing happens. Then something touches her face. Mallory grimaces. But it is only the fold, returning to its place on her nose and temples.
You're going to have to open your eyes.
It's true. Tom's recorded voice means she has arrived where Rick said the channels split. He speaks as he once did, in the living room of the house when he used to say,
"Maybe they mean us no harm. Maybe they are surprised by what they do to us. It's an overlap, Mallory. Their world and ours. Just an accident. Maybe they don't like hurting us at all."
But whatever their intentions are, Mallory has to open her eyes, and at least one is near. She has seen the children do incredible things. Once, after flipping through the phone book, the boy called out that she was on page 106. He was close. And Mallory knows she's going to need a feat like that now, from them, right now. There is movement in the water to her left. The creature is either no longer curious about the blindfold and is leaving, or it is waiting to see what Mallory does next. "Boy," she says, and she needs to say no more. He understands the question. He is quiet at first, listening. Then he answers. "It's leaving us, Mommy." Despite the distant warring birds and Tom's beautiful calming voice coming from the speaker, it feels like a moment of silence is occurring. Silence emanating from this thing. Where is it now? The rowboat, released, is being pulled along with the current. Mallory knows that the sound of the water ahead is the sound of the split. She doesn't have much time. "Boy," she says, her throat dry, "do you hear anything else?"
The boy is quiet.
Boy? No, Mommy, I don't. Are you certain? Are you absolutely sure? She sounds hysterical. Whether or not she is ready, the moment has come. Yes, Mommy. We're alone again.
Where did it go?
It went away.
Which way?
Silence. Then, it's behind us, Mommy.
Girl?
Yes. It's behind us, Mommy.
Mallory is quiet. The children said the thing is behind them. If there's one thing she can lean on in the new world, it's that she has trained them well. She trusts them. She has to. Now they are level with Tom's voice. It sounds like he is in the boat with them. She swallows hard. She wipes tears from her lips. She breathes deep. Then she feels it. Just like when they let Tom and Jules back into the house. Just like when they thought they were letting Gary out. The moment between. Between deciding to open her eyes and doing it. Mallory turns to face the channels and opens her eyes. At first, she has to squint. Not from the sunlight, but from the colors. She gasps, bringing a hand to her mouth. Her mind is emptied of thoughts, worries, anxieties, and hopes. She knows no words to explain what she sees. It's kaleidoscopic, endless, magnificent. Look, Shannon, that cloud looks like Angela Markle from Class. In the old world, she could have looked at a world twice as bright and not had to squint, but now the beauty hurts her. She could look forever, surely another few seconds. But Tom's voice urges her on. As if in slow motion, she leans toward where his voice comes from, savoring his every word. It's like he's standing there, telling her she's so close. Mallory understands that she cannot keep the colors she sees. She must close her eyes again. She must cut herself off from all this wonder, this world. She closes her eyes. She returns to the darkness she knows so well now. She begins rowing. As she approaches the second channel from the right, it feels like she is rowing with the years, the memories. She rows with the self she was when she found out she was pregnant, when she found Shannon dead, when she answered the ad in the newspaper. She rows with the self she was when she arrived at the house, met the housemates for the first time, and agreed to let Olympia in. She rows with the person she was when Gary arrived. She rows with herself, on a towel in the attic, as Dawn pulled the blankets from the windows downstairs. She is stronger now. She is braver. By herself, she has raised two children in this world. Mallory has changed. The boat rocks suddenly as it touches one of the banks of the channel. Mallory understands they have entered it. From here, she rose as the person she was when she had the children alone. 4 years, training them, raising them, keeping them safe from an outside world that must have grown more dangerous each day. She rose with Tom, too, and the dozens of things he said, the countless things he did, and the hope that inspired her, encouraged her, and made her believe that it's better to face madness with a plan than to sit still and let it take you in pieces. The boat is moving fast now. Rick said it was only 100 yards to the trigger. She rose with the person she was when she awoke today. The person who thought a fog might hide her and the children from someone like Gary, who could still be out there, still watching them move down the river. She rose with the self she was when the wolf struck, when the man in the boat went mad, when the birds went mad, and when the creature, the thing she fears above all things, toyed with her only form of protection. The blindfold. With the thought of the cloth and all it's meant to her, Mallory hears what sounds like a loud metallic explosion.
The rowboat crashes into something. Mallory quickly checks the children. It's the fence, she knows. They have triggered Rick's alarm. Mallory, her heart pounding, no longer needing to row, turns her head toward the sky and yells. It is relief. It is anger. It is everything. We're here, she calls loudly. We're here! From the banks, they hear movement. Something is coming fast toward them. Mallory is gripping the paddles. It feels like her hands will always be in this position. As she coils, something touches her arm. It's all right, a voice says. My name is Constance. It's okay. I'm with Rick. Are your eyes open? No, I'm wearing a blindfold. Mallory's mind is flooded with distantly familiar sounds. This is what a woman sounds like. She hasn't heard another female voice since Olympia went mad. I have two children with me. It's just the three of us. Children? Constance says, suddenly excited. Grab my hand. Let's get you out of the boat. I'll take you to Tucker.
Tucker?
Yes, I'll show you. It's where we live. Our facility. Constance helps Mallory grab the children first. Their hands are clasped together as Mallory is pulled out of the boat. You'll have to excuse me for carrying a gun, Constance says timidly.
A gun?
You can only imagine the sorts of animals that have triggered our fence.
Are you hurt?
Constance asks.
I am, yes.
We have medicine. We have doctors. Mallory's lips crack painfully as she smiles bigger than she has in more than 4 years.
Medicine?
Yes, medicine, tools, paper, so much. They begin walking, slowly. Mallory's arm clutches Constance's shoulders. She cannot walk by herself. The children grip Mallory's pants, following blindfolded.
Two kids,
Constance says, her voice soothing.
I can only imagine what you've been through today.
She says today, but both know she means for years. They are walking uphill, and Mallory's body throbs with pain. Then the ground beneath them changes suddenly. Concrete. A sidewalk. Mallory hears a light clicking sound.
What is that?
That noise? Constance asks. It's a walking stick. But we don't need it anymore. We're here. Mallory hears her knock quickly on a door. What sounds like heavy metal creaks open, and Constance guides them inside. The door slams shut behind them. Mallory smells things she hasn't smelled in years. Food. Cooked food. Sawdust, as though someone is building something. She can hear it, too. The low hum of a machine. Several machines whirring at once. The air feels clean and fresh, and the sound of conversations echo far away.
It's okay to open your eyes now.
Constance says kindly. No! Mallory shouts, gripping the boy and girl. Not the children.
I'll do it first.
Someone else approaches. A man.
My God, he says. Is it really you? Mallory?
She recognizes a man's dull, husky voice. Years ago, she heard this voice on the other end of a phone. She has debated with herself for 4 long years whether or not she'd hear his voice once more.
It is Rick.
Mallory tugs at her blindfold and slowly opens her eyes, squinting against the harsh white light of the facility. They are in a large hallway flooded with light. It's so bright that Mallory can barely keep her eyes open. It's an enormous school. The ceilings are high, with domed light panels that make Mallory feel as though she's outside. Tall walls reach to the ceiling and are crowded with bulletin boards,
desks, glass cases. There are no windows, but the air feels fresh and crisp, like the outdoors. The floor is clean and cool. The hallway is brick and very long. Turning back to Rick, she stares at his withered face and understands. His eyes are open, but they do not focus on any one thing. They loll in his head, glassy and gray, and lost their glimmer years ago. His full head of brown hair hangs long and shaggy over his ears, but does not hide a deep and faded scar near his left eye. He touches it apprehensively, as if feeling Mallory's gaze. She notices his wooden walking stick, worn and awkward, bent from some broken tree limb. "Rick," she says, pulling the children close behind her. "You're blind." Rick nods.
"Yes, Mallory. Many of us here are. But Constance can see as clearly as you can. We've come a long way."
Mallory slowly looks around at the walls, taking it all in. Handwritten banners mark the progress of their recovery, and flyers declare daily assignments for farming, water purification, and a medical evaluation timesheet filled with appointments. Her eyes stop above her, and in brass letters embedded in a brick arch, she reads, "Jane Tucker School for the Blind."
"The man," Rick pauses, "the one on the recording, he isn't with you, is he?"
Mallory feels her heartbeat quicken and swallows with difficulty.
"Mallory?"
he says, concerned. Constance touches Rick's shoulder and softly whispers, "No, Rick, he isn't with them." Mallory steps back, still gripping the children, moving toward the door. "He's dead," she answers rigidly, scanning the hall for others, not trusting, not yet. Rick begins to tap his walking stick, moving closer to Mallory, reaching out to touch her.
"Mallory, we've contacted many people over the years, but fewer than you might think. Who knows how many of us are alive out there? And who knows how many are sane? You're the only person we expected to be coming down the river. That doesn't mean nobody else could, of course. But after careful thought, we decided Tom's voice would not only alert you to the fact that you'd arrived, but it would also let strangers know a civilization of some kind was near, if they were to get stopped by the fence first. Had I known he was no longer with you, I'd have insisted we use something else. Please accept my apology."
She watches him closely. His voice sounds hopeful, optimistic even. She hasn't heard a tone of voice like his in a long time. Still, his face wears the stress and age of living in this new world just like hers does, like the housemates once looked, years ago. As he and Constance begin to explain how the facility operates, the fields of potatoes and squash, their harvest of berries in the summer, a means of purifying rainwater, Mallory sees a shadowy figure move behind Rick's head. A small group of young women emerge from a room wearing plain light blue clothing. They tap walking sticks, their hands waving in front of them. The women move quietly, ghostly, past Mallory, and she can feel her stomach sink as she sees their cavernous, hollow eyes. She feels lightheaded, sick, like she might throw up. Where the women's eyes should be are two enormous black scars. Mallory clutches the children tighter. They bury their heads against her legs. Constance reaches toward her, but Mallory pulls away, frantically searching for her blindfold on the ground, dragging the children with her. She's seen them.
Constance says to Rick.
He nods.
Stay away from us,
Mallory pleads.
Don't